It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. Well, you're back from Jerusalem, huh?
Oh, man.
Off to Israel again?
Yes.
So soon?
Yes. It was like an extended weekend in Jerusalem.
Did you hang out with our Hasidic friends again, or what?
No, I didn't.
Oh, this wasn't that.
No, I did in the airport, but not the same
Okay.
It was like close to Rosh Hashanah, and they went nuts. The whole, I mean, the entire airport was full of dancing Hasidic Jewish guys out of the 1850s. They dressed like that. I mean, are you,
and what are they doing at the airport?
I think they're going off to
where
they think, you know, was sort of one of the holy sites in Russia.
Okay.
I forget where it's called, but
I guess if you live in Israel, you have to go to Russia for the holy sites.
No, I don't know, dude. I mean, okay. there's a whole background to there that I'm only learning, but it's quite a trip. I mean, it's weird. I really enjoyed being back in Jerusalem. As weird as it was, I felt like the last time I was there, I walked around so much that it's like, oh, I know this place. So I had a very weird feeling of like, I'm like home.
You weren't there very long. This trip,
I was only there for like 3 days.
Yeah.
I had gone because at the invite of the folks that run God TV, they're wanting to sort of rethink a whole new realm of what they do in ministry, and the folks that run that are good friends of mine. So I really just went to spend time with them and their executive board.
I don't even know what God TV is. Is it a cable?
It's a global television network.
Is it rented time to most?
Their headquarters where they broadcast everything is out of Jerusalem. Their international headquarters, but I mean they're everywhere. I mean. You'll find them on DirecTV. They're one of the big Christian networks that are out there.
Okay.
I think what I really enjoyed was meeting a bunch of the people behind the scenes and the genuine passion they have to, I think, capture what God is doing around the world and trying to share that as an encouragement to others. I mean, they only sell a certain amount of the time that they have on purpose so that they're available to sort of find out what God is doing in different places. And so it was just, there were some really wonderful people that I had a chance to enjoy over the course of 2 or 3 days that I sort of met a whole bunch of new friends that were excited about God. And so I was going like, wow, you know, I don't know what's going to all come of it other than, you know, on a business side, we're helping them do some stuff in the whole social media realm. So,
oh, is that what you're doing? Okay,
yeah.
And so, they were pretty excited about some of that.
We're gonna follow up and do a few more different meetings to unveil some of that. But it was fun. It was certainly a long flight, 16 hours.
Ooh, did you fly over to the East Coast and then fly over there, or you went from L.A.?
I was able to snag a direct flight, which was very nice.
But 16 hours, that's a long time.
16 hours on one plane. So I'm a bit discombobulated.
Did you get them to fly you business class or first class? Or no? Back of the bus, huh?
No, I got business class, but they took my laptop away. Security. Every time I've gone...
This was L.A.?
Yeah.
Oh?
I've gone through 3.5 hours of grueling interrogation each time. And you're just going like,
16 hours without a computer?
Yeah. Wow. I had hoped to get an awful lot of work done.
Did they let you have your iPad? Or that was gone too?
They took every last electronic equipment I had.
And just keep it somewhere until you land and then give it back?
I was hoping that I was not being divested of them forever. I was going, because they were still doing a whole bunch of tests when I had to get on. I'm just going like, I better get this back.
of I go to Jerusalem. You got to remind me. I got to take a book then, man, because that's all I use now to occupy my time. Is
I know that's all I had planned for. So wow. It was very disconcerting. So me and Jesus, we talk about.
Do you sleep on planes? Okay.
Not really.
No, I don't either.
Not really.
I did have a miracle on this last flight to Australia. My flight was supposed to leave at 10:30 at night. It left at midnight, actually, and I fell asleep 6.5 straight hours. I've never done that on a plane. I fell asleep. I felt like I just closed my eyes, and I opened them again. I'm looking at the movie. I'm going, that's the fourth movie in the list. If I remember the list right, that's the fourth movie. Because I wanted to watch that one. And I looked down, and I'd been asleep 6.5 hours, which is...
That's awesome.
It's awesome.
That's awesome.
I hope this is a new trend God's starting.
Wow. Yeah, no, I don't have that gift.
I don't either.
Yeah, sleeping is not one of my spiritual gifts, but...
Do any sightseeing at all? Or pretty much...
Well, yeah, I mean, they were right... Their headquarters is right next to the old city, so that's where I spent most of my time. I didn't do any of the tour stuff that other people were there doing, because I was more just in strategy meetings.
But. No, we went to... Did you go out and walk around Temple Mount, or...
We did. They actually had an evening broadcast right outside at the Tower of David that
were you
I got to tell you was pretty awesome.
Were you on it?
No.
Oh.
I wasn't trying to be on it. What was exciting, though, was what an incredible venue to do some wonderful meetings right leading up to, you know, I think it was Rosh Hashanah or something like that. It's
Yom Kippur, yeah, starts tonight.
Here. Yeah. And it was fascinating to be there with all the different Palestinian stuff just going off. I mean, it was like the, you know, so it was a little tense.
Yeah.
But it felt like there were some significant things happening. The mayor of Jerusalem was there at the meetings and stuff like that. So,
huh?
It was cool.
You realize this podcast may never air.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I
just another conversation.
Oh, no, there's some people. There's some people that really believe this Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is the second coming, the rapture. It's got a lot of press, but
for real?
Yeah, I talked to a guy I know well.
Gosh,
love and respect.
I was just over there, and he did not tell me that this was it.
Yesterday.
I would have stayed.
That long conversation.
I would have stayed.
Yeah, I know. And I just go, you know, I'm not convinced. I'm just not there with you. I love you. I just want to know, if it doesn't happen, are you okay come Saturday? Are you going to be all right? And he said, yeah.
Really? I mean, this is a full-on expectation. That's got no airplay.
No, it's not in the media. It's not a media-driven event. It's just
so what
some
is
people.
It?
There's just some settledness
just some
in
people?
People's heart that it felt like the timing of what's going on in the UN with Israel.
These are friends of yours?
And Palestine. Yeah, good friend. And
I think there's a few more events that need to transpire, personally.
Well, no, I'm with you there. That's where I'm going.
I
don't think
we're missing
rapture,
a few elements here.
Is next on my... But what I said to him was this. I said, if he comes on Thursday, I'm all good with that. I'm really okay. If this is it, I'm fine. If he doesn't, are you okay come Friday? And he said, yeah, I'll be okay. I'm going, good. That's all I need to know. I mean, I did tell him, I said, you know, I think these are the kinds of things that seem to always distract people from real relationship. They go on a real journey with Jesus, and then whether it's eschatology or house church movements, there's one of these distracting elements that then pulls my life aside. And he said, you know what, even if it doesn't happen, he felt like his journey with God had really grown over the last month in a way that was really positive. And I just said, I'm good with that then. So if you're good Friday, if it doesn't happen, I'm good Friday if it does. And it's Sarah's birthday Thursday, so...
Oh, there you go.
What a better time.
What a better time. Rocket yeah. ride to heaven. Woo.
I guess he could come then, and it would be cool.
Well, happy birthday, Sarah.
So, yeah. Well, I'll let her know. She probably doesn't listen to the podcast anymore. I don't know if she keeps track of them or not anymore. I will be. In fact, Friday morning, I'm flying out to start the weekend in St. Louis. And then mosey on over Monday and Tuesday to Kansas City. And then end up in Wichita Wednesday, Thursday, Friday,
you going
Saturday.
To visit Dorothy? What you do?
No, Dorothy. Is that Penny?
Penny?
Yeah, Penny's got a bunch of folks around with
her. New Jerusalem Missions.
Yeah, I want to talk about some of the Jesus stuff. She's getting ready to go to South Africa. So got some good friends in St. Louis area I haven't seen in a while. So that'll be a great, great time there. And same way with Kansas City. So looking forward to just having a little loop around the Midwest and coming home. That'll be cool.
Sweet.
Yeah, it should be sweet.
You know what? I think, where are you with the whole rapture thing? Are you a rapture guy?
Oh, boy. I'm not ready for this conversation. I think the day is coming when Jesus will appear and we will become like him.
Yeah?
As we'll know him as he is. Yeah. If you want to nail me down somewhere, I'm a premillennial, post-trib kind of guy. So I'm not thinking we've
pre-wrath rapture guy?
No, not a pre-trib.
Huh? He just threw a whole bunch of terms out there. I'm pretty sure our audience is not exactly the terminology guys.
I guess in the end of the day, I love the joke about being a pan-millennialist. It'll all pan out in the end.
I mean, I ascribe to that.
I still think there's more to happen in the world. I don't think the rapture is going to come exactly tomorrow. I look for the man of lawlessness to be revealed, and I look for a whole lot more of the downslide of the economy. If this is the time and if this is the moment, then I look for a lot more to happen yet before actually we get raptured. But if I was living in China or some of the places in Pakistan, whatever, I might feel like I've been in the Great Tribulation for a good number of years, and they'd be all good with Jesus coming today, and we just weren't part of it in the same way over here in the West. But so no, I used to be, I mean, I was a George Ladd, blessed hope, reading dog, loving all that stuff, had theories about it, hated Hal Lindsey and some of that stuff. I used to be so into that up to my earlobes, and now it's hard for me to even work up an interest in it. I want Jesus to come to this planet and change it to reflect his glory as soon as he can possibly come. I find myself praying almost every day, Jesus, come quickly. So I'm into that, to figuring it out, to knowing the roadmaps anymore. I'm just not even curious about that side of it. What about you?
Yeah, I'll be honest, I don't really ascribe to all of the little theories or getting buttonholed. I sort of feel like there's a whole side of the world that when they talk about that, they're not really listening to what you actually think. They're looking for terminology and buzz terms, and they're arguing for a position. I'm just kind of like, you know what? I'm pretty sure that none of us have it all this so figured out that, you know, it's this and the rest of them are all wet. Yeah. And I know great folks all over the place that think lots of different things. I think the thing where I come out is, you know what? It's not such a bad thing to live as though he is imminent in his return.
Yep.
I think that gives a sense of, on the good side of the urgency of what's important in life. And so I love that. I also love the fact that, you know what? There's some, I think, little scary verses that talk about when he returns, there'll be some that will shrink back in shame, and the little nuance of the meaning there is as a guilty thing surprised. I think it's exciting to long for his return, going, Jesus, I'm looking for you. Hmm. And so to me, when people that are focused on the whole end time stuff, when they're marked by that sense of love and longing, and with a sense of urgency of what's important in life, I go like, well, whatever they call that, that's great. When it's the doom and gloom people that are just looking at all the ripped off from the headlines and they're just going, oh, it's all going bad, I end up going like, really? That's what your study of this leads you to? That's unfortunate. That's a bummer. And so, you know, I think, yeah, I'm a little more, not tongue-in-cheek, but I would be a pan-trib, pan-millennial kind of going like, you know what? I have my thoughts. I don't really think that we have this exemption card from difficulty. So I'm a little more post than pre.
Yeah.
But there's a sense of going like, you know what? My issue is it could just be hilarious that there's a bus that comes and whoever wants to get on it gets on it and then goes and watches in the balcony. And then there might be some other guys that say, you know what? I'll take the next round. I'd like to stay here and get some. I just kind of wonder.
Wow, you're out there, dude.
Well, no,
you've got all kinds of scriptural evidence.
I'm just kind of like, you know what? When you listen to all the different arguments, because I used to be really well studied on all the whole elements, I mean, I got just about every commentary there is on Revelation, and it's funny that, you know, very few of them agree with anybody.
Yeah.
I just go like, gosh, there's really brilliant people that think all kinds of different things. And they use the scripture to prove all different kinds of conclusions and how everyone else is all sort of wet. And I'm going like, I'm pretty sure that if we can all do that, then the truth and not one of those.
Yeah.
But it's got to be somewhere. It's like, so Lord, you know, my deal is, hey, when you come, can I go with you? Can I hang out where you're hanging out? And if you're staying, I'm staying, yeah. You know.
You know, part of me glazes over when people seem to know so well what's next in the whole eschatological unfolding of the end times. is I think about the I can't help but think about those football pregame shows where they talk with such certainty about who's going to win and who's going to lose, who's going to have a great day, who's going to have a bad day. And I watch some of those when I get back from a trip. I take because I like some of the humor and I enjoy some. But if you ever watch a pregame show postgame, it's hilarious at how stupid just about everything that's being said is. Because one knows.
That's how you look at the whole prophecy, Buster.
No. End time roadmaps, that's how I look at it. We have lots of scripture hinting things to us that it'll be fun to see how that comes to be true. That's, and I think of Jesus' words, I'm telling you these things now so that when they come to pass, you'll believe. Which doesn't mean I'm telling you now so you can figure out the whole thing. He's just saying, look, just know what it is. When it begins to unfold, you're going to go, oh, that's what this is. And that to me is a far better way to handle it because a post-game show is always more accurate than a pre-game show. Well, look who won and look who had a great day. The other thing I loved about this conversation yesterday, because I used to, as a kid, we grew up with a lot of fear of God stuff with church and Jesus coming again and some be left, some not, that whole thing. And I always hear sometimes in a sermon, if you knew Jesus were coming 1 week from today, what would you do differently? And it was, oh my gosh, I'd do just about everything differently. I was sitting with this guy talking, I'm going, what if I knew, absolutely, as certain as this guy was, that Jesus is coming on Thursday, what would I do differently today? And I couldn't think of a thing. I thought, you know, I probably wouldn't be recording a podcast if I knew it wasn't going to air. But in terms of what my life is about and who I'm with, it wouldn't be any different. I don't know that I'm going to run around the world trying to make some last-ditch appeal to something. Or, you know, I'm settled with the conversations I have, the people I know, what God's asked me to do. That was a neat thing to come away from the conversation going, if he does, I'm all good with that. If it's going to be a little bit longer, and I suspect it might be, then I'm okay with that too. So cool.
Well, I didn't have that conversation this week. That's interesting.
You did now. I just drug you on into it. Yeah.
I wasn't even aware.
We've gotten some fun email.
Yeah?
A little bit. It's been a while since we've caught up with people. We've been throwing lots of stuff out there.
Yeah?
Michael wrote this. Great. There I am working off my pie. Doctor says I need to eat less pie. And well, so then you guys go all Calvinist doctrine police on me and start... And then start raining on pietists and blame them for all the church's problems. So here I am trying to work off my pie, and now I can't even be a pietist anymore.
I didn't know.
So now
I learned something different in church history. I thought the pietists were something else. But
so he says, now I really need help as a Keswickian, Anabaptist, Wesleyan, Arminian pietist. Phew, who apparently now is in need of a therapist. Keep up the good work. You guys really keep me with the pace on the treadmill.
There you go.
Thanks, Michael.
Pietists. Were they the first ones that started the church potluck?
See, I don't know because I'm not a pie guy. I'm a cake guy. So I don't even understand the pietists. I'm a cakeist.
Doctrinally, you're just in a whole different wing.
And I can assure you on the God Journey podcast, we're not going to attack any cakeists. We're just not. If you can have your cake and eat it too, more power to you.
I got to tell you, when I was over in Jerusalem, they just have different food. They do.
Falafel?
No. I think I was in some Moroccan restaurant, and I got to tell you.
Well, you can't blame Israel for Morocco.
No, there's a bunch of them over there.
Yeah, but it's not Israeli food, is it?
Okay, whatever.
You can get Moroccan food in New York.
Whatever. The reality, I have no idea what any of the words were, but it was like some, chicken pie thing. And it had powdered sugar and cinnamon on it.
Yeah?
I got to tell you, I looked at that and went, someone's not understanding the whole pie dessert filling thing because it's like, is this an entree? It was sort of like, are you serious? We're going to eat this?
I hear you.
I ate it.
Yeah?
It was good.
You liked it?
It was good. I did not think you could have cinnamon, sugar, and chicken, and it would go off like that.
See, I'm
serious. I just have to go no, this doesn't work.
Yeah,
this is very weird. It was great. And then we had a whole bunch of other things that I've never seen them before.
You know, I read something the other day that really encouraged me.
Okay.
Yeah, it said that people who seem to be selective about eating have a greater density of taste buds than those who will eat almost anything. Because I've been called a finicky.
So what are you saying?
Oh no, I've been called a finicky eater all my life because I have a narrow channel of things I truly enjoy eating.
Yeah, other than Diet Coke, what else do you like?
Chocolate cake.
Chocolate cake and Diet Coke.
Food group.
And then barbecue chicken. Is there a third?
I'm a meat and potatoes guy. I'm into all that, but I get served all kinds of stuff when I travel. People want to go to Thai places and Moroccan places. I'm telling you, spicy food and I do not get along. I can eat it. I always eat it. But when you describe something like that for me, I'm going, you know what? You're not going to be my Mikey. You're not going to be the guy. Well, I'd like to try it. He likes it. I want to try it. I'm going, I don't think so, Brad. I'm not going to let you
do it. It was fascinating. And then the desserts, my gosh, I still can't to this day figure out what they were made of, but they certainly were tasty. There's all different stuff.
Wow.
I sat there going like, you know what? Life is like that.
I have this great track record of mine. When I look at something and go, ooh, I'm not going to like that, I'm almost always right. I almost never have.
Gee,
to
I wonder well. Why that is. Golly.
I'm going, ooh. It's
wow,
gonna be,
there's some real like psychology
this,
there.
This will be a tough dinner. Yeah, there is. Let's not process it. Jennifer wrote this, which shows not all podcast listeners are healthy. She said, it's been so nice to listen to podcasts each week. I usually hang up laundry and clean while I listen, and I actually look forward to cleaning because of them. That's amazing.
That's a powerful effect.
That must be a project.
Listen to the God Journey podcast. It'll help your cleaning.
Well, it's going to make you excited to clean. Here's how I know I found a good book.
That's a new tagline.
I work out 4 days a week on a stationary bike. Absolutely hate it. Hate every minute I'm on the bike.
Don't you hate not getting anywhere?
But I understand when I'm reading a book. No, I don't. Really. You don't have to watch out for traffic, and that's all that matters to me.
Stationary bike. Pedal so hard I never get anywhere.
So I can read. I can read while I'm pedaling. And there are a few books I've had that I'm in the middle of this book going, I can't wait to exercise tomorrow because I get to read the next part of this book. And that's when you know you got a good book. Mostly I'm sitting there going, I'll be glad when this time is over.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Phil wrote this, I'm just overwhelmed with thanks to God and for you both. Thank you for being voices of grace and freedom in what so often seems to me like an infinite cacophony of other voices shouting and whispering messages of love and striving and shame-based living. I was a prisoner of those voices far too long. By the kindness of Papa, I am slowly starting to come out of it. Your podcast has been a lifeline to me over and over again the last few years. I was a pastor for about 7 of those. A couple of years ago, God led me out of that and into the other thing, this living love thing that is not of this world. We have recently located to Milwaukee and have met some wonderful people who are hungry to true family and for love in the world as he leads. It's a delicate place because my flesh wants to jump in and lead, but my heart can't do that anymore. Your podcast is helping me keep out the religion and in relationship with Abba. The last few years, as all this detox has happened, another dynamic has also been happening. I've been feeling a stronger and deeper desire to share with the lost. You know, a real burning desire. But I also have this even deeper desire to live loved and in freedom.
That's all good.
That's a wonderful transition, I think, in someone's heart and life.
You know, I have lost my need to lead.
Good. I know that seemed weird. I paused a lot. I was actually trying to think, did I ever have one of those?
Hey, yeah, there you go.
Did I ever have one of those? I don't know. You lost your...
I don't know if I ever, quote, had one of those, but I think that whole compulsion of the religious knee-jerk of I need to do something, need to start something, need to be something, need to. Yeah, it's like I happily was sort of like, okay. You know, it's like I don't mind sharing and being excited about what's going on in people's lives. But that sense of the, I must do this, it's like, unless there's a real sense of God's particular assignment, I don't have that thing inside that needs to kind of make it happen. And I got to tell you, that is nice.
I think that's what Phil was saying. I wrote him back and just said, you know, I think it would help us, particularly people that, you know, have a sense of wanting to help people grow, wanting to help people in this journey, to think less about starting things and starting ministries and starting groups, because that's all involved strategizing and all that, and more in terms of just tasks and doing what God puts on our heart to do. I said, so if you feel like you and your wife want to have some of these people over for dinner and help them start a conversation about what it is to live in the life of the Lord, and if you have it on your heart, I've done periodically, have a Bible study for a couple of months on a certain topic and people want to come and be part of it, do all that. without having to say, let's do this now every week from now on and let's find something else to do after we're done with that. And if we thought in terms of tasks instead of starting ministries, I think then we would not end up in that place where we end up leading something instead of keeping the focus on people and what God's asking me to do, just help people grow and live and have
life.
But I got an interesting email last night from a group here in Newberry Park that's starting some kind of newfangled kind of church thing. And
there's a newfangled thing happening.
Yeah, newfangled deal, but
Newberry Park
actually sounds fairly healthy, except it's still got a lot of the old methodology in it. But they had all their whole leadership team had just read So You Don't Want a Church Anymore and loved it and said, would you come over and have a conversation with us? I'm going, are you kidding? I wouldn't miss that for anything. That'd be great.
That'd be perfect.
So I looked at their website, and they've got some interesting priorities. Some of the methodologies are still a bit war-weary, but... Okay, this kind of goes along with what Phil was saying. This is from Cliff. Wayne, I have recently left my church as God is revealing more to me about his love and living in his grace. I thought you might appreciate this summary of the pastor's reaction to my leaving. The wife of our former pastor, another lady from the church, called, leaving messages to check on us. Feeling it only appropriate, last week I sent the pastor and his wife a letter explaining that we would no longer be regular members. I tried to convey a spirit of fellowship and brotherly love, telling him that he and I knew that we had a long had theological differences, but ended up thanking him and the church for praying us through a car accident we had a few years ago and for loving us through other difficult times in our life. I said we may visit from time to time, hope to stay in fellowship with those we love and who love us at the church. I found out that Sunday the pastor read my letter, or at least the parts of it he chose to read, aloud to the congregation. Then at about 6:30 Sunday night...
Why would you do that?
Here we go. Then about 6:30 Sunday night, I received an email from the pastor. In his message, he said that my letter was duplicitous. He said that I will need to be more specific about the theological issues we differ on. He said that in my spiritual growth, I have become unteachable, and now I'm in a state of rebellion. He went on to say, the Lord has yoked me to his mantle, and he has not released me from that. He said that I have opened my heart to deception, that I'm sending a terrible message to my children, as have I undermined the spiritual authority that was over all their lives, as I denigrate the spiritual leadership in the church. He stated that it would not be in the best interest of the church for me to visit, and they don't need the upheaval it would cause. He ended his message saying that if at some point I am willing to come before the body and publicly acknowledge my need to surrender to his authority, then I would be welcomed. All that to say, wow. Talk about confirmation that we made the right decision.
Did it end with kiss my ring?
Wow. Wow.
Wow, that's interesting. I'm glad I never got a letter like that.
Wow, can you believe he said, the Lord has yoked me to his mantle.
This, ouch.
Oh.
What does that look like?
Do we not read...
Lord, thank you.
Do we not read Galatians chapter 5, man? Don't be under any yoke of slavery. It's for freedom that Christ has set you free. I mean, even the guys who claim to believe in that book...
I think they skipped that
verse. ...can write stuff like that. But I loved his response. I was just, hey, wow, what a confirmation we made the right decision.
Love you with the love of the Lord.
I think you might have. And Lynn said this from the Out of the Spirit podcast. He put on the blog, actually. He said, another great podcast. The born-again idea you interjected, Wayne, may be well worth pursuing more in-depth in a future podcast. It seems like the life we are now living definitely compares more to a birth process than anything I've experienced in the past. I think that we were talking about Nebuchadnezzar.
Niedermeyer. What are you talking about?
I'm having a brain collapse. I can't remember who that guy is. That guy
John?
Is John 3.
Nicodemus.
Nicodemus.
Yeah,
I just want to... Nebuchadnezzar.
Nebuchadnezzar. Yeah, that's
Niedermeyer.
A good one. Nehemiah.
Niedermeyer's that buzzy-eyed little kid in grade school. Anyway, we were talking about Jesus saying to him, he must be born again. It's the only place he used it. And I did the throwaway line, maybe more that it's for those of us who are in religion who need to be born again than maybe the world. And he said, let's talk about that some more. I don't know what more to say about it.
I don't think it's possible to really enter into the kind of life that God's talking about if there isn't some kind of radical change of the way we even approach this. Because my spirit is very different than my brain that thinks thoughts. Yeah. And they're not at odds. It's just my brain cannot do the things my spirit can.
Or can't see the things.
Yeah, I can't do spiritual things without God. I mean, I don't know what it is to go have a spirit that does anything apart from it being infused with the life of God. So I think that, unfortunately, because that's relegated to, oh, that's that experiential stuff. And it's like, no, I don't know that it's just that experiential stuff. It's Because my emotions are not the same thing as my spirit. And I think that for most people, they're going like, well, now you're talking something funky and weird. And it's like, no, there is an other than reality to this life in God that I'm just going like, when he's leading and there is a sensing and there is a spiritual dimension to that, it is life-giving and so much different than what it is to trudge up the hill with the best of my reasoning and intellect or trying to have my emotions be in check. It's just going like, you know what? I don't know how to do any of that stuff unless my spirit is present and taking the lead.
And letting that become another voice in your life. I think we've been really structured, the intellectual voice and the principled argument, that's how I live my life. And it is like being born again to realize there's another part, there's another voice in my life that speaks to me.
Yeah.
Not just what my head concludes.
And it's not losing your mind or become some fruitcake.
Right.
It's the fact that, no, there's an actual relationship.
Because it's not anti-intellectual. It's not anti-intellect, but it is saying, gosh, there's another place. What I thought about when I read it, somebody said, nothing has compared to me as a birth process like this, kind of moving out of religion into a more engagement with God. I think religion for me, the way I used to grow up, the way I grew up in Christianity, and there were some parts of it that are real. I'm not dissing the whole thing, for sure. But it felt like, in terms of what I needed to be doing, it felt more like adding a new program to a computer. It just is another program to run on Wayne 1.0. And learning to live loved and learning to live in that space in a heart that's relating to God was really more like getting a whole new operating system. None of the programs run on that used to run on that. And the programs that do run on that are just very, very different. And so I would second that. I think for me, being born again out of my human effort to work God and learning to live inside God's working in my heart, I think that has been, I go back 16, 17 years ago when this part of the journey began for me. I would say, gosh, that's much more of a born again experience than whatever it was when I went forward at Billy Graham, which fits the way we mostly use that term, born again, when I first publicly gave my heart to Jesus. But in terms of wakening up to a new reality, to not fight to be loved by God, to not fight to be special to God, to just live inside an affection I already have and listen better to the way he wants to work in my life and the ways I was trying to get him to work, that I understand what he's saying about that. That's been more like a birth process than anything else I've experienced as well.
Yeah, I mean, I look at religion tends to be about managing a system of sorts, whether it's a, you know, set of guiding principles or whether it's shame management. It's just, it's my working something. Whereas I think the life that we're invited to have with God that has a sense of wonder and adventure, it's responding to a life. It's not a system to manage. And it's not a bunch of things to organize. It's like, it's not anti that, but it's not that.
No, it's not that at all.
We can do all of that and never have a life to respond to. That's the thing that I'm just like, that's the biggest ripoff on the planet. Is here you are managing, doing, and being told as if that's, you know, what it is. I mean, I love in I think it's in Acts where all of a sudden, you know, they happen upon some of these believers that have just known about the baptism of John and they've never heard about this baptism of the Spirit. And it's like, hey, what's that?
Yeah.
And you're just going like, they somehow were able to recognize these guys as, well, they got some of it, but I think they're missing a piece. And they recognize them as followers, but missing a piece. And as opposed to these people receiving that and saying, oh, you're judging us. You're saying we're deficient of something. It's more like, they responded with, no, we didn't even hear of that. I think there's huge segments of the religious population. They've been given some kind of thing to manage, and they're doing their deal.
And they're working hard.
Yeah,
and they're exhausted it's all every day.
It's like, I don't want to need to rip on anybody, but it's like this life with God cannot be lived, enjoyed, and anything if it doesn't have a spiritual reality to it. And that's other than all those things that I manage and have as just my own faculties.
So what do we say to people who have, you know, worked the Christian life? They've been committed, devoted, done stuff. And I don't mean just lost in religious performance stuff. Really wanting to live with God, have pretty much done that out of principles at their head all their life. And we're sitting here talking about the heart, a relationship with a someone, and they're going, I don't know what that is. If there was somebody coming to you with that on their heart, what would you, where would you point them?
You know, I would point them to just kind of sit down on the couch. I mean, it's like, I wouldn't denigrate any of what's brought them here. The fact that they even showed up is sort of like, well, guess what? I think you're being tractor beamed. I think that's God saying, I have something more than just what you've known. And I think, you know, if you can get out of the whole religious assessment in terms of, gee, how did I do or what grade did I get on the final, it's more like, you know what? Is that satisfying? Is that touching the deepest parts? Do you know that you're in a relationship with the living God, or are you feeling like you're having to play both parts?
Yeah, no, they're saying, I don't, I want to.
I sit
on the couch.
I think at that moment, there's a sense of going, you know what? There's an honesty of communication inside that we are all capable of. But I think you've got to be loved into a spot where you can do that. And I don't think it's hard. I don't think there's some formula to have. I don't think there's some, well, if you only had this experience or here, I'll put my hand on your head and you'll experience this. It's like, I don't think there is a recipe of what God needs to do to someone. But I do think there is a point of real surrender that says, God, this cannot be just about me. Unless you are present in a knowable way that is me and you, I don't know how to live this life.
Because I get some people write and say, I hear you guys talk that way. And I really wonder if there aren't some people that are more intuitive. And you and Brad are more intuitive. And so you get to live out of that.
They don't know me.
And then some of us are really intellectual. So God is only going to deal with us in our intellect. And I want to just scream, no, and I don't want to take the high road saying, you know, what I've got, you need to have too. But part of me says you're missing something.
You see, but it's not about the intellect, nor is it about the emotive.
Right. No, it's not about.
I mean, it's like, because I look and I'm like, guess what? I could be very cerebral and academic and can get totally in my head. I can be very emotional. And neither of those are what the realm of the spirit is really about. And I think what I found out, and you know, most people that are coming to that place, it's like, it took me quite a while in life to get to that place of just going like, hey Lord, I feel like I'm running out of gas. I've done everything I know to do, and it's well intentioned. This is not, I'm, you know, mad or I really just want to be a sinner. It's more like, I'm really trying to do this, but I feel like I'm playing both parts. And I don't find that satisfying. And I know there's more. But I don't know what to do to get there. See, I think it's in that place of available surrender where it isn't prescribed. Where you're not going, well, if I just have this experience. I mean, I remember lying in bed. This is hilarious. I remember lying in bed and all of a sudden, my right arm started to tingle. And I'm going like, ooh, could be God. Okay, and I'm thinking, so I'm going with it. You know, it's like, yes, Lord. And here's as goofy as it is. I was lying on my arm. I think I was cutting off some of the circulation.
Having a God moment.
I think I was having a God moment because I was having a physical tingling sensation in my right arm.
And your tradition would say that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
A God deal.
Yeah. Just go with that.
Go with it.
And I got to tell you, what happened after that moment was the fun, wonderful encounter. As soon as I sort of realized how goofy this was, all of a sudden, I moved my position in bed, the tingling stopped, and to be honest, that's when I encountered God kind of giggling. Not at me.
Right.
But with almost an affirming sense of, I really love that you looked for me in that moment. I did not feel put down, but it was one of those, okay, I felt so stupid and self-conscious. And all of a sudden when the awareness is, you know what that is, Brad? That's you just having cut off the circulation on your arm and how absolutely silly. I was ready to just pile on the negativity towards me. And God in that moment was just graciously there and kind of having fun with me in a way that I was able to embrace and know was separate than my emotions about me.
Yeah, and it's good to know that, because if you don't, then you get into this thing of, I was leaning on God in a certain way, and then when I shifted position, I lost it. And that's where other people would go.
I suppose. Yeah. Oh, Lord, come back! Come back!
You got to lay like this, people. This is how you lay, and then God makes himself known.
See, but that's where, for me, and I love the tradition that I have been, the family I've grown up within, but I didn't grow up in a family that validated any of that. Then I spent time with another tribe that did, and I think I love the heritage of the both and of just going like, you know what? I don't think any one of these groups has the whole deal.
Right.
I think I'm hungry to say, Lord, I want to know you in the whole realm of fullness. I want to be able to celebrate in all the experiential ways of knowing you. I want to not need that. I want to be able to love you in the quiet of just sort of being there without having to perform or do or evidence fruit or here's the power gift. You're just going like, Lord, I just want to know that you and me have friendship.
Yeah, and that I'm available to you, and anything you want to do, I'm in on. And I think that's what people, because I think the one thing you said about the surrender side from us, I think is just absolutely dead on. I think we've got to find that space of just surrendering to the way he wants to do it. On the other side of it, there's got to be a revelation from him in the heart that makes himself know. It's not we conjure up. We don't make it happen. And I even tell people, it takes a year or so or two for that to happen. Just relax. Learn to relax in him.
Right.
And you'll see it faster than trying to work it up in some way, or feel like you're less than because that hasn't connected for you yet.
Or that you have to have some kind of certain prescribed experience, which is, I just like, gosh, so many of the groups, it's like someone else's new litmus test to, can we do a dipstick check and see if you have the Holy Spirit?
Yeah.
You know, it's whether you speak in tongues, whether you've healed. So, I mean, it's like, I look at all that, the unfortunate reality of that tends to breed insecurity. Because if I didn't have an experience like you, then maybe mine isn't valid.
No, and I'm just going no like, help there.
Ah!
Yeah, and I do think that God. We keep saying this over. The God journey really is when God allows us to learn to live in that space with Him. Not anti-intellectual. It's not without emotion and feeling, but it's neither of those things. It's the reality of a connection in the heart, that spirit that comes alive. And in it coming alive, I learned to recognize that God is a significant voice in my life and a significant presence that makes sense of things. And that's, I want to help people live there.
Yeah, and I mean, other than inviting someone to that place of kind of sitting down inside, where it's sort of like, okay, I don't need to keep climbing up this mountain trying to make it happen between me and God. I've climbed to here. And then it's, Lord, I'm now available, but I don't know what's supposed to happen. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I just sort of feel like, gosh, if you can let go of that one, that I'm supposed to do something.
And be comfortable there.
See, yeah, I think that's part of the whole being able to be honest. Because I think in that moment, it's like, gosh, we're so used to having a sense of well-being tied to my doing something right.
It's that being still and knowing that I'm God. And the hardest thing for us to do is to
actually
cease
be
from
still.
Our own labors and trying to cough up something we're expecting and said, God, I'm just surrendering to who you are and I want you to make yourself known to me. And I think he's pretty faithful to answer that prayer. It's maybe not right away, not the next second, but just cultivate that life in him.
See, I think there's a good side. I mean, another word I would use is broken. There's a good side of being, in my mind, broken before the Lord, where it's not like, gee, I'm a dirty rotten. It's like, it isn't with the
shame-based. Yeah, broken
shame
has
based.
A really con-
no, I
my tradition. Yeah.
I understand that. But I think there's an element where it's like, I've got to come to a place of awareness that whatever it is, I'm not a sufficient one.
The giving up.
Yeah. And being okay with that. See, I think a lot of people come to that place of, brokenness, and they're not okay. They're ticked, they're mad, they feel ashamed, they're embarrassed, they're anything but okay with that. And I'm going like, you know what? I think it's a surrendered, available sense of going, whatever this life in God is, I can't do it. I can't. Lord, I need you to come in a way where it's like, not just a new operating system. I mean, the image I had is like, well, just unplug the computer and, oh, it works. It's no longer the electricity of the wall. It's no longer some man. It's like all of a sudden there's a life that works, but I know it's not me that is doing it. And until you've had some defining elements of that, I think happened in the course of time, I don't think that that line is very clear to a lot of people. They're going like, dude, all I've ever known is what I know. So if you're talking about that other thing that is beyond description, it's like, gee, that's not very helpful at all because I don't know what in the world you're talking about. I think when there's an encounter with the Spirit of God, there comes an element of being able to go, oh, I now have a frame of reference I've never had before. There is a thing called the Spirit, and I didn't know that prior to this. That's what I've spent a ton of time just chilling out in, going like, oh, that's the difference.
And what we're saying is you're best off experiencing that when you can relax into that rather than you're trying to force it to happen. I don't like the expression people use, God can't use you until he breaks you. And that's why the brokenness thing, I know we'll get email about it, going, well, some of it's been broken, some of it's had. It's not really that. It really means coming to the end of yourself and just giving up trying to make something happen. And that's where it's easier to see what he's doing and how he wants to take our lives on.
Yeah, see, for me, that's not a bad word, but I get that that might have been used in weird ways. So.
Well, all our traditions are different, so terminology is used a bit different. Well, off to the Midwest. You going anywhere?
Yeah, I'm always going someplace. Who knows?
Bye-bye.
But we'll see you.
Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.